Mother, man.
This is Joe from Man Must Die, and you're listening to Murder, Metal, Mayhem.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder, Metal, Well, hell yeah.
What the fuck's up, fuckers?
Gotta love some Scottish metal freak doing the promo for us.
That hell yeah, sounds die. Fucking hilarious.
Joe McClellan.
Hilarious, just sounds awesome.
It does. It sounds so yeah. Cool. So love those guys. Love that band. Gonna talk about them later. But good to be doing a new Murder Metal Mayhem here at Horns High Studios for the Horns High Podcast Network, episode 233, going down tonight.
Fucking so. Right.
Fucking A is right. And Chris, you're here at Horns High with me. And Joey, yes, you're over there in the 419 in Toledo. How's things over there?
I am. Not bad. And we're going to talk about Toledo for a second tonight.
We actually are, yeah.
That's right. That's right. The origins of this whole mess take place in Toledo. I was dying when I saw that. So definitely going to get into that. And had a great time at the Painted Wraith anniversary street party. I mean, that was so cool. Yeah, they had music out there. It wasn't metal, but it was, cool. Just
Courtney was digging it.
Courtney was digging it. Yeah, her friend was part of the band.
Yeah,
So that was really cool. I sold a shitload of books. We're going to talk about it later. And lots of listeners were there. Really cool. Toledo Dream was there.
Toledo Dream?
Yeah. Fucking. Or I'm sorry. the Latino Dream. Wow. The Toledo Dream. There could be a Toledo Dream, but no, the Latino Dream was there in the flesh. So good to see him. And so I'll talk about that later. Great. That was fun. All right, well, what shirts we got tonight, Chris? What are you doing over there?
Got the old school motherfucking crotch ripper shirt, rocking that shit today.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I figure I get fucking polish all over me at work anyway. I'll, like, see? It just matches.
Right? That's cool. Some crotch ripper. Nice. Joey, what about you, dude?
I'm repping Indiana. I got the Decrypt Peter Pan Christ shirt.
Fucking A.
And I just figured since we were talking about a nutty cult leader that Peter Pan Christ was pretty proper.
Yeah, that's for sure, dude. And that's definitely a cool shirt, man, from what I can see in the video.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. I've had it for a long ass time and I wear it somewhat regularly and it still fucking looks good. So
yeah, that's awesome. Well, I wasn't planning to wear this shirt tonight, but I wore it Saturday at the event and a lot of people were digging on it. And I hadn't worn it in a while. I'm like, you know what? I washed it today. I'm like, fuck it. I'm wearing it. So, Faces of Death.
Faces of Death.
Yeah, I love this shirt. I always get a lot of old schoolers that are like, dude, I remember watching that shit with my brother, you know, and VHS,
right,
you
that's
know,
like
and all that.
Before Rotten.com and shit.
Yeah, it's so old fucking school. It's great. And so, I definitely dig it. And definitely was a fan of it, just like the rest of us. So, last week, though, guys, we continued our month of cults here with a feature on the Anthill Kids, one of the most fucked up ones I think I've ever heard
Dude,
of.
Dude, that's pretty fucking crazy.
That's
like,
tough to
weird
talk.
As fuck.
Really
like, people
weird.
People like following the shit that he did.
Oh my God. The fearless leader, old Rock Terrio, did some of the most horrendous
it's Moses,
shit.
Sir.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. Moses. And we talked about it. I mean, surgery without anesthesia, cutting this dude's nuts off with a rusty razor.
Shit.
Freezing infants to death outside. I mean, it's fucked up. Absolutely just awful. And we had our buddy, Shane Borchuk, the nice guy from Winnipeg, the Canadian, on to talk with us about it. And that was
Borchuk
fun.
The Canuck.
That's right. That's right. And one of the half of our Polish team.
The Polish guys.
Oh, yeah.
Joey, you did the metal feature. That was a good one. Shane, I know, was digging it.
Yep, I did Gore Guts, keeping it Canadian.
Yeah, that was awesome. And all Canadian music throughout the episode, which was killer. And
I just saw, I mean, I guess I could have waited till metal, but we're talking about it now. But Cannibal Corpse just announced their new tour. And
oh, I saw.
I can't remember who's, maybe Revocation, or I can't remember who's on it, but I know that fucking Gore Guts
is on it.
That's badass. Dude, I just saw fucking, I'll wait till metal.
Yeah, you saw a show. Chris went to a show.
Well, that ain't what I was going to say, yeah, but I'll talk about that too, but.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, it was a good one. The killer cage match, the usual just silliness, and we're passing 900 on that one today. So thanks to everybody that did listen, and if you missed it, go on and check it out, episode 232. Tonight, though, going with the cult theme still in August, we've got some, you know, done some fucked up ones. And this one may not be quite as fucked up, tough to top the Anthill Kids, but... Yeah,
it's still weird.
Considered very fucking weird and one of the worst cults in U.S. history. And we're talking about the Church of Synanon, which a lot of people probably never heard of. But it started out as a rehab for drug and alcohol abusers. Very highly regarded. I mean, people thought this was the shit.
Turned out not to be.
No, and courts were sending people to this rehab, like court-mandated rehab, sending them there. And it morphed from that into this New Age cult where they're sending military hit squads called the Imperial Marines out to do some fucking horrible violence, pistol whippings, I mean, rattlesnakes in the
fucking nuts,
fucking mailbox. I mean, it's insane. So it's a good one. We're going to dig into that when we get into our murder segment. So that's, cults are just going to be nonstop all month. So we got another good one. And I got the horns tonight and going to be doing a feature on the technical death metal band from Glasgow, Scotland, Man Must Die. Love those guys. Absolutely killer. And I'm going to be schooling everybody on that and playing a little 6-minute clip of the interview I did with Joe McGlynn, their singer. Oh, yeah. And Joey, you got a lost classic for us, right?
Yeah, I got one fucking, and it's not so much a lost classic as it is an unknown classic to a lot of people, so hopefully I turn some people on with this one.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I always love a good lost classic. I think those are cool, and following in the tradition, of course, of CK, so.
Hell yeah.
And we got some other metal news. We've just been talking about it already, so I think the metal segment's going to be happening this episode. But we got a new killer cage match, and of course that's where we get a list of 100 killers, 100 objects for them to fight with, a variable in the cage, and a song just cranking the fuck out while they kill each other.
It's never usually a good song either.
It's not. I mean, we have had a few good ones, but usually it's some shitty song. But that makes them mad and they fight harder, but it's a blast, and we get our listeners... that provide random numbers so we know who's fighting. And Chris,
tonight we have fucking our homie Cody Durst.
Oh, hell yeah.
The homie Justin Morris and our good friend fucking Jeff Ignatowski. So
hell yeah. Three good dudes. So fucking A, thanks guys. And we got another beauty going on tonight, Joey. What's up?
Tonight, for our killer cage match, we're gonna have fucking David Berkowitz. We always like having that fool in the fucking cage.
He's a big dude. Yeah.
And he's gonna be going up against the axe wielding crazy bitch herself, Lizzie Borden.
Oh boy,
who we just did her not too long ago.
That's right. Yeah, and I thought that's a weird matchup, but man, he's in for it, dude. This fucking bitch is psycho as fuck. So. That's going to be great. The fucking behemoth himself, Berkowitz.
Bro, I got to talk about just, and we're talking about Berkowitz and, you know, him with his New York accent.
Oh, yeah.
I sent Pete a link to the, I got to tell Chris because he didn't know, but I know you guys did the Cottingham episode on Murder Mail Mayhem.
Yeah, right.
Richard Cottingham. But I just saw an interview with him that I had never seen an interview with the dude before. And this one channel got one with him. And the way this dude talks is just like Pete doing a New York accent.
It's really bad.
And he's
from,
like,
Jersey too, so it's worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he fucking and he's like super matter of fact about his killings too. Like he'll talk about it with the, you know, the fucking interviewer and shit. So
that's fucking.
But
great.
I was dying laughing.
I gotta
so I
check
Pete
that out.
Yeah.
I haven't lit checked it out, but I will. That sounds great. Yeah.
And that one's so old, possibly somehow do a brutal rewind out of it, because I don't think I was on it with you guys. Maybe.
Yeah,
we
actually brutal rewind for the crazy one that blew up on all those listens.
Yeah.
Is number 5 now. So it
oh wow.
So Sugar Babe is now 4 and that is 5. And I can't remember what's like right behind that. So yeah, it's gonna you know. And the number
is
one
Black
episode
Dolphin still 3.
Yeah, and the number one is still the first episode, but number 2 is Columbine.
By a cunt hair.
Columbine is very close now, so it's gonna switch soon. So yeah,
by a cunt hair.
exciting to see. For sure. So that's going to be a good one. And Chris, that the objects,
I'll
variable,
make a difference in the variable. And that, like I said, the music always sets the tone. Motherfuckers get pissed off. They don't want to hear something.
Right. Or get jacked up.
Or get jacked
angel
up.
Angel of death and fucking want to kill. So big thanks to everybody listening, guys, who came back with a vengeance this week. 5,080 listens.
Boom.
Thank you very much for... We've been doing this like 6 weeks, seven
weeks
now. Yeah,
that's fucking great. Thanks for everybody spreading the fucking word.
You know what's crazy, too, is our new episodes basically still have the same amount of listens per week.
Right, but people are going backwards.
So, yeah, they're listening to all that older stuff now.
Love that shit.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, yeah, they're really going backwards and getting through it like that, and that's awesome because I've done the same thing with podcasts that I like. So thanks, and if you don't, you know, if you want to tell your friends, your grandma, whatever, have them check it out. Chris, how about our top 10 cities listening to Murder Mountain?
All right, now top 10. So number 1 starts with a C, ends with a no, and in the middle, Chicago. We got Chicago's number 1. We got...
thank you, Chicago. You guys have been number 1 almost the whole time.
Right?
So thank you.
We got Vicksburg, Mississippi, fucking
goddamn
number 2.
Over there.
Number 3 is Brisbane, Queensland in Australia.
Hell yeah.
Dixon, Texas at number 4. Decatur, Illinois at number 5. Number 6, Honolulu, Hawaii. Shout out to everybody who in Hawaii who had to go through that fucking shit in Maui.
Yeah, some shit going on over there.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Number 7, we got Dallas, Texas. Number 8 is Phoenix, AZ, Arizona. What up?
Oh, yeah.
Austin, Texas, number 9. And fucking Chichong City in Taiwan is number 10.
Fucking thank you. Oh, yeah. And then, Joey, how's our breakdown on the abroad? Listening to countries listening to us.
U.S. is 86% of our listeners, which is to be expected. But we are followed by that by Australia, Canada, Taiwan, Germany, Sweden, the UK, Poland, Brazil, and Italy. So hell yeah.
Boom.
All over.
Yeah, that's awesome. And thanks
metal
to
countries.
Everybody who listens to us, wherever you are. We appreciate it very much. And go check out our website, murdermetalmayhem.com, where you can get merch, you can get more information about the show. And guys, we got a lot on our plate tonight. Going to be taking a little trip to sunny California, but I'm telling you, I want to try to stay away from some rattlesnakes jumping out of fucking mailboxes.
That's fucked up. Man, before we go, though, before we say the words, Joey, what you smoking tonight, homie?
Well, right now I'm smoking some Dead Prez.
Dice.
But for the murder segment, I got this fucking... churro oil infused fucking joint pre-roll. 35% fucking THC. And I went to the store yesterday. I don't ever go to the weed store because I fuck with the people that sell the weed to the store.
Right,
and
right.
Grow it, you know? But I couldn't get a hold of anybody for the past week or whatever because they were out of town. So I was like, man, I'm going to go hit up the fucking store up in Michigan, you know? And it's only like 15 minutes from my house and shit, you know? Yeah. So I was like, hell yeah. I went there, and for the first time, you get 50% off. So I was like, fuck yeah. So I fucking stocked up on some shit.
Definitely.
So yeah, so I got this pre-roll. I got some pretty good fucking flavors I'll be smoking over the next few weeks. So shout out to Luna Pier fucking dispensary.
I don't know what it's called, but I got some pretty loud that I got from one of my Mexican friends.
Oh, yeah. All
right.
Fucking so yeah, oh, fuck, my bad. So let's get our fucking murder on.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Dope. Necrokinesis, a one-man band from Ireland. That dude is fucking killing it. Some thrash death metal just came out. Absolutely amazing. That song was called That God You Kneel To, and the album is called A Force Made Flesh. Absolutely amazing. It's great. So go check them out, Necrokinesis. And I wondered what that meant. And it's the power to cause someone to die by touch or thought. So
fucking right.
That sounds pretty fucking sick to me. And so definitely digging that.
Shit, I don't have it.
Yeah, so yeah, that's just a cool band name. So definitely props to those. That guy, I always meant, it's, I still get Joey confused. We were talking about this last week that I said that I'm getting confused to refer to it as a band or a person. So as a one-man band, what would you say to somebody having those troubles?
I mean, you can refer to them as a band. You can refer to them as a person. This is my opinion.
Either way.
I'm okay with getting called either of those. What'll always get me is the person that comes up to me and they're like, oh, I love you guys, or you guys were killer, I saw you. So, and I was like, well, obviously I'm not. Yeah, it wasn't me, because I'm just a one man. I'm just one dude, so it's not these dudes.
Right.
But, so, yeah, either way, you can call me by my name or my band. Like,
that's cool. Way, I didn't want to be disrespectful. I just didn't really know, because it's not something I've ever encountered much before. All right, well, tonight we're going to be doing the Church of Synanon. Definitely one that I think a lot of people haven't heard of and considered to be one of the deadliest cults here in the U.S. And as always, guys, it starts with that charismatic leader like they always do. Old Chuck Diedrich was the guy. Doesn't look very charismatic. Kind of a strange-looking dude, but he was very successful in starting this rehab in Santa Monica, California for alcohol and drug addicts in 1958. So, but as the 60s and 70s rolled around, shit changed. It became more of a cult with strange rules and, you know, a church, you know, not wanting to pay taxes, so they become a church.
I mean,
you know, that's the thing, right? Scientology does it. You know, there's plenty of it. And Chuck fucking somehow, along the way, loses his fucking mind and starts sending out these fucking hit squads called the Imperial Marines.
Yeah, they're dope.
To do violent, they're doing like fucking their own version of fucking martial arts and shit. We're going to get into it.
That is,
it's fucking wild.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's a good one tonight. Just a lot of stuff we could poke fun at, but definitely not as gruesome as the Ant Hill Kids. But, like, what is? You know, you got to do something after that. So, dude, why not do the Church of Synanon?
We should probably fucking do, like, the Church of the Horns High.
Yeah, there you go. So, Chris, we've had fun this month doing the cults. We got cults, you know, this is definitely not a big name one, I would say.
No, I'd never heard of it until you said it. I was like, I don't even know what the fuck that is. And so now my knowledge is still very small on this thing, because like, I checked some stuff out. I didn't have a lot of time to check a bunch of shit out, but
hey, you know, I just like, we all do our bit and we put it together and we all learn. I learn a lot from what you guys tell me. Joey's, you know, putting his two cents in. I mean, it's just awesome. So
it's just an odd story how it went from the whole
rehab to Hit Squad.
Boom. Here we go.
Yeah, what the fuck? So it's definitely a wild story. We're going to tell it. And then Joey, as our resident drug expert, had you ever heard of Synanon before we were doing this?
Synanon Toast Crunch.
That's great.
Before I answer, I'm going to light up this fucking joint real quick. I fucking they're only 1 gram, but they're oil infused, and I smoked one of these on the way home by myself, fucking from the place yesterday, and it fucking lasted me fucking forever. So I'm lighting up now. I'll tell y'all whenever I put it out, so you can see how long this joint lasted me while we do.
Nice.
All right. So now, as far as the Church of Synanon, where I had heard of it first was that book with the cults. I gave you a copy of it too, Pete.
Yeah. Because there's a chapter in there, yeah.
Yeah, that was the first place I had ever heard of it when I read that book, and then I looked, you know, on the internet for more shit, obviously, after that. But, yeah, that was the first place I'd ever heard of it was that book.
Yeah, that was a good article, or a good chapter of that book was on Synanon, which was cool. I mean, everyone we've done so far is in that book, which is kind of wild, you know. But as Joey's coughing, hopefully he pulls out of it here.
I'm dying. don't die on us, bro.
So this was one I really had never heard of before, but I did a search on deadliest cults, and it came up. So when I did the research and just, you know, superficially, I'm like, you know, this would be a good one, something different. We like the obscure ones, so, you know, hey, why not? And I think a church sending out a military-style hit unit or hit squad with fucking rattlesnakes and karate chops is definitely worth telling on Murder Metal Man.
Tommy would have loved this one.
Yeah, definitely. So
sorry, Tommy.
So every cult has to have that charismatic leader to draw in the followers, and Synanon's founder was a guy by the name of Chuck Diedrich, as we mentioned. He's born in 1913, and Joey born and raised in old Toledo, Ohio. So,
you in his stomping grounds, dude.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I saw
Man,
that.
Motherfucker, shut up, boy. Give me that motherfucker joint. Blah, blah. Punky in this motherfucker. Punky taking over 419 Studios real quick. Let me puff on this joint, bitch. Yo, y'all talk about Charles Diedrich, a motherfucking Toledo native, went on to become one of the greatest religionists in the motherfucking world. Y'all about to talk shit on this dude? That's all gang. Synanon, all gang. He got love. He Crip certified Toledo native. Fuck that. Punky out.
Wow.
God damn, Punky.
That motherfucker just came out of nowhere. Yeah,
that motherfucker just bunched in your house or what, dude?
Or was he like on the
couch? I haven't
couch
seen him
somewhere
for a while.
Oh, wow.
He's been over on the east side fucking chilling.
God damn, dude.
So, yeah, Chuck is their guy. He's got this medical condition, though, that caused his right eyelid to droop. He was a great salesman.
Wait, hold on. Who else did we know that had a medical eye condition?
Henry Lee.
That's right. But he also had a drinking problem. That he was a great salesman in his day job, but he had a drinking problem. He ends up in AA, and his father was an alcoholic who died in a car accident.
He was probably drunk.
Probably. So Chuck was successful, though, in AA, and he was surprised that they didn't accept drug addicts at the time. So he decided to start his own group to support both. And he was considered, and still is to some, considered a pioneer for the things that he did. And a lot of that stuff they still do in rehab, which is interesting.
Which is kind of fucked up.
It is kind of fucked up, you know. So, I mean, Chris, it started out as tender, loving care.
TLC, baby.
That just doesn't sound like any cool cult called tender, loving care. I mean,
come on. But fucking, so this is like the 60s, right? The 60s, 70s, right. Whatever. And he's like...
Started it in 58.
Right, he started in 58. So, yeah, like... But, like, he had gone through some experiments at the at the colleges, though, fucking for drug rehabilitation. And you know what they were using? That sweet, sweet LSD. Because they said, how are you going to take somebody that's an addict to something and fucking put them on another fucking drug is what right. I want to know. Like, oh, here, you're addicted to all this stuff? Try this. This helps. It don't help.
But Chuck, I mean, he was like really moved by the experience with taking LSD. I mean, he said.
If he was microdosing, maybe. It's just like, yeah, boy. But
did you see what he said about it? He said, fucking.
It changed his life. Like,
yeah. He said, the most important single experience in my life, I became a different person really and truly. Everything that has happened to me since, sending on everything, dates from that point.
That's fucking
crazy.
It is
just
crazy.
Just from eating some LSD.
Yeah. So it definitely, you know, inspired him. So Joey, I mean, this guy's a natural salesman. And what about that phrase? I thought this was interesting because everybody's heard this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Today is the first day of the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Supposedly, he coined it.
He coined the phrase. I mean, that's fucking... Everybody knows.
Yeah,
that,
exactly. You know, that's pretty cool, man. You know, I mean, that's... Wow. I've never said anything so profound that anybody would...
Like, take it.
Take it and run with it. Although, you know, who knows? There could be people screaming Murder, Metal, Mayhem at the top of their lungs. And somebody will think it sounds cool, like, you know? Anyway,
I mean, I could see him. He was a good salesman.
He was. You know? He really was.
It's the charisma again. Like we talk about these cult leaders, the charisma, dude.
It's funny because he's coming across as a salesman. You know, he's relating to people where the other side of the cult, the other fucking Charles Manson, you know, he wasn't very good with the public like that. So his fucking ways were different.
Oh, but, yeah.
And it's funny, too, because the one we're talking about tonight, he's like, no, I go by Charles, you know, or Chuck. And Charles Manson, I remember somebody called him fucking Chuck one time. He said, do I look like a Chuck?
Oh, shit.
You know what I'm saying? He hated that shit. So
that's
funny. Like the two differences, but they were both cult leaders.
Yeah, is interesting, Joey. Yeah, for sure. That's funny. Chuck Manson.
But if it had happened, though, it would be normal. You know, it sounds funny to us now.
Right.
But of course, if it was the way it was, it'd just be normal. It'd just be like, yeah, Chuck Manson.
Exactly. Yeah. So he has got this natural charisma sales thing. So, yeah, he's using those things in business now on people to convince them to do what he's telling them to do. But he must have pissed off a bunch of fucking people who wanted to knock him down for trying something new, especially without any medical personnel on his staff. So he did not want medical people associated with it because he thought they were the reason why everything was so fucked up. So that's how he decided to run this thing. And the locals in Santa Barbara did try to stop him at some point. They were trying to say he was operating without a medical license.
Didn't he actually go to jail for it for a bit?
He did. The governor gave Sinanon an exemption to run without any medical staff. But he did do a couple of weeks in jail, and that brought a lot of attention to the whole him and the cause. And he became kind of a cult hero at that point, you know?
Right. And I think whenever he first started doing what he was doing, you didn't need to have a... you didn't need to be fucking, you know, whatever, a fucking therapist or whatever. I can't think of what I'm trying to say because I'm smoking this joint and I'm stupid. But but at that time, you didn't have to have the certification to do that shit. So that's whenever he was basically just doing it out of his fucking home or out of the storefront whenever they started, because it was like a meeting of people, and it I mean, it just gained ground on its own. But yeah, I think over time, then they instated the laws that fucking said that you had to have the certifications and all that. Right. Of course, he didn't have none of that by that point. So yeah, then they came at him.
Right.
The fucking neighbors too. They fucking, I mean, everywhere he went, they fucking hated him because
they didn't want addicts around the neighborhood.
Yeah, they don't want addicts in their fucking around their fucking.
Who
place.
Would? But you know, they got to go somewhere. I mean, it's fucked up. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's shitty, but it's true. I mean, who would want that? You know.
And whenever he went to jail, that whenever we were talking about for the you know, not being certified, he only went for like 6 or 7 months. I think it was something like that. But
it was 2 weeks. He said,
"Oh, okay, yeah, I knew it was short, super short." But he got out and he said, "Well, I guess we did this on the wrong side of the tracks," and fucking whole bunch of people. You know, like that statement too, and fucking started going towards his movement, giving him money, politicians,
huge
police, all,
donors.
Like, all kinds of people.
Yeah. Huge to get donations, So then the name Synanon, apparently the way they came up with the name was kind of a morphing of symposium and seminar, which doesn't make
a whole
lot
of
sense.
I want to come in on this.
But then there's Anonymous, apparently, was
Anonymous,
part of it, too. So.
So fucking Syn, S-Y-N, like in an American language, is like with people, like to get everybody together. And then Anonymous, the A-N-O-N, is the other part. So it's like all these people together, but you're Anonymous. Because he was in AA, and he didn't like... When he was in AA, he enjoyed when he got to talk and everybody applauded him for his, like... Hi, I'm Chuck, and I'm an alcoholic or whatever. And when he got done with his talks, he did. But yeah, Syn, S-Y-N, means everybody together. And
I feel like I'm on Wayne's World talking to fucking Alice Cooper. God damn. Wow. Jesus Christ.
My bad.
You need a fucking chalkboard or something over there?
But yeah, wow. That's what it is, though, right?
Impressed,
there. It's like
Chris?
Everybody together, but we're Anonymous. Synonym.
Fucking A, dude. So there you go. So interesting the way they come up with these names. But they changed it from Tender Loving Care to Synanon Foundation in 1958, and things start to really catch fire. They outgrow their original spot. They moved to a different one, which was a former armory right there on the beach.
Oh, people didn't like that, though.
No, in Santa Monica, right by the pier.
They're like,
too,
hold on, man, these motherfuckers, what?
Yeah, and that was in 1967. So back when I was born, they moved into that one by the pier. And Chris, it is funny that the wealthy, like we were saying, they don't like, you know.
No, you're on the beach in Santa Monica. You got a fucking goddamn old warehouse or whatever, just full of fucking drug addicts and alcoholics fucking coming in and out.
All living there, though. Yeah, so they're like
living there. So they're like on the beach and shit. They're fucking, woo, this is the life.
Yeah, what a fucking deal, right? I mean, what a deal. You got a place to crash on the beach? Like, I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, like all of a sudden, I got these people following me. I got he's got a compound right there on the fucking beach. Like, these people ain't going nowhere,
no,
dude.
So they were
They've
pissed,
been living
dude.
Under the bridges and shit. Now they on the beach. They got a bed to sleep in.
Exactly.
Fuck
so
yeah,
these
dude.
Neighbors, though, they're not liking it very much. Kind of funny. But he had such good success. That's the thing.
He did.
So, I mean, it started legit.
His talks were straight up like, 80-some% of the people that leave Synanon never fucking go back to drinking or doing drugs.
Yeah, the success was tremendous. There's like all these jazz musicians, and like I didn't recognize the names because I'm not into jazz, but I mean, these were very well-known people in that world. I mean, just unbelievable the success rate that he had. And Joey, he's getting all this Hollywood support, man. What was up with that?
I mean, Charlton Heston and Leonard Nimoy at that time. I mean, how much
fucking
bigger
Jesus
are you
Christ,
get?
Man!
I know Jane Fonda was one of them too, but I can't stand
Fonda,
her. But whatever.
But she was big though. Still,
oh
you know,
for sure.
So, I mean, these like the people that were catching on to their fucking message and what they were talking about at this time was fucking huge. Like they were at the point right now they could have took off in one direction and probably fucking took over. You know, the cult game.
Right? Probably.
But, But they're going to fuck up a little bit. We're going to talk about, obviously, this is Murder Metal Mayhem, so we're going to talk about some chaotic shit.
Yeah, but what was the deal with the game, Joey? That was a big part of their shit.
The game was a big part of it, and it was a big part of what attracted these the celebrities that we're talking about that would hang out there.
Yeah.
Like, there was a ton of them. Like, fucking politicians.
Oh, there was, like, I mean, all kinds of higher-ups in the fucking...
They even quoted, I can't remember who it was, but shouted out to the president over a fucking telefax or whatever back then. But he was like, yeah, there truly is a miracle happening out here in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the Synanon cult. So, I mean, that shit's crazy. But anyway, so they had this thing called the game. And the game was basically like, this is fucking harsh, brutal treatment.
100%.
To try to fucking, yeah, and this is to try to dissuade you and to make you hate your addiction. And this is basically where fucking they call you out for your faults, fucking bring up what you did and fucking really down you for it to make you feel like shit. Right. And it's kind of like a roast, you know? But not really that funny.
No, not funny at all. But they would also
very emotionally battering.
They would also get to a point to where like they would start like making up shit and whatnot. Like no, you fucking did this, and you know you did, and like call them all sorts of names for being on drugs or alcohol or whatever. And meanwhile, these people are on the same shit. But then it would rotate around as soon as that person said, "Okay, yeah, whatever." Next person in line, guess what?
Yeah.
You're there.
Yeah. Brutal,
you get it. And this is the person.
And it's fucking loud.
Yeah, and this person was
yelling. Screaming and yelling and fucking like
it's
a roast.
Fucking insane.
Like a roast. And they were doing this shit 24, 36 hours. I mean, sleep. They wouldn't let you go to the bathroom, so you're shitting and pissing.
Dude, at a roast, though, it's all fun and games. This is fucking just straight brutality.
Yeah, this is nuts. And it's crazy that they got, like, Leonard Nimoy to do this. Like, what the fuck?
Right, yeah.
So that's just weird. And I saw there was one where Chuck poured root beer over someone's head in the middle of the game. And that, like, was like this.
That was the...
This, like, the tipping point where they started to get violent. Like a pour of root beer
now outside. Violence is here?
Yeah, like how is that like the catalyst to violence to now ensue? I don't know, but pouring a root
beer.
But
they were just saying that fucking absolutely like their top thing that they preached was like no animosity and violence.
Oh.
And for him to actually show any kind of aggression, it was weak and petty in hindsight, but up till that point they had a belief that they were all against that, and that wasn't a world that they want to live in. And all of a sudden he fucking comes out and he's like, boom, pours the root beer on her head, you know.
Yeah,
people saw that, like, it was in front of a bunch of people, so they're just like, oh shit, okay,
we can get away with shit,
acceptable
we can do this,
right
yeah. Definitely was a tipping point there. So it was just the kids doing it was crazy.
So weird.
You know, to see little kids like yelling at each other like that, it's just weird. Because the way things are done today, and I know a lot of today's shit is just overboard the other way around, but this is just, this shit is just not for kids, especially. Adults that want to do this, whatever. But kids, I mean, that's where I draw the line.
Definitely, like,
people
we're
would be
pretty
totally
much all the
wrecked.
Same way.
I mean, after getting the group turning on them like that, and fights were known to break out after the root beer incident, and this is going on multiple times a week, and they're all living in this compound. He doesn't let them go anywhere, so they're all there. It's like part of the deal. And I wonder if that's how Queen came up with that album, The Game. You know, I don't know. That's the big one, you know, with Another One Bites the Dust and The Thing Called Love and all that.
I mean, that is kind
of
odd.
So who knows? That is kind of ironic. You know, they could have written it about Synanon. I don't know. Never dug into the history of it that deeply, but any Queen fans on there that want to call me as a fucking complete jackass for saying such a thing, let me know. All right?
Because I got no idea.
No. Yeah. Anyhow.
So Chuck realizes the best way for him to keep his members active is to require them to stay there, like I just said. 1968, instead of graduating from Synanon, they changed it to you had to stay with them on a permanent basis.
Because you never fully recovered. Right. Hence the 12-step plan. You're always an addict.
That's right. And so he wanted more control over their lives. Now, maybe in the beginning he was doing this for good intentions, but then, like I said, things start getting weirder. He's getting more controlling. And
I kind of feel like AA is a cult.
Yeah. I've never been to a meeting, but I'm sure it could get like that. And, you know, they had to work for the cult. They had to relinquish all their property, their money, their possessions. He's got all this free labor. And Synanon would branch out into other small businesses. And at the height, they were making $10 million a year from donations alone. And the all 60s. The revenue streams they had coming in. I mean, what the fuck?
You know? In the 60s, in early 70s. They're making
a money-making machine here. So new locations are popping up. Money's coming in. They're buying up real estate. This is very Scientology-like here. Go ahead, Joey.
There's also the thing that some of the quote-unquote therapists that came out of Synanon, like, that were around from forever and, like, ended up leaving but branching out and doing shit on their own, no longer members, but they still had some of the belief systems from Synanon and what they took with them. So even though Synanon didn't directly hold these certain people, their influence was still getting out there beyond that reach.
Right.
So it's just, it's crazy how it's spreading.
Yeah, it is, and how it lasts. You know, this just sticks with people like that. Courts are sending addicts to him, like I mentioned. And like you were saying, Chris, these high percentage of success rates, they say 80 to 90%, but then I read somewhere that's never been challenged. So, you know, I don't know. But nonetheless, he seemed very successful with it.
Did you see also, like, as far as, like, telling the people that they ended up having to stay there, you know, instead of leaving after a while?
But, right.
He said that there were a certain number of people that after they graduated the course and they went out, then they relapsed and they ended up being junkies again or doing whatever, you know, being alcoholics or whatever it was. And so he, in his mind, was like, well, obviously, these people need to be with me.
Right, they need to be
for
here.
For it to take effect.
Right.
Or otherwise, they're not going to be able to fucking have the full effect. So that was part of how he justified making people stay with him. Because he was like, if you leave me, you're going to go out in the world and get fucked up.
Right.
With me, you're going to be fucking doing good like you are right now.
Yeah, you stay here and follow my rules. Fucking.
Yeah, it's like somebody being able to stay clean on the inside and then they hit the streets and they're back, you know, back on it. You know, almost right away. You know?
I mean, when last time I went to jail, I was in there for a month with no beer, no cigarettes. I walked out, got my pack of cigarettes, lit a cigarette, went straight to the bar and got a beer. So I mean,
So Chris, things are getting stranger here, and now he puts a ratchet on the tobacco, dude.
Hey man,
you wouldn't go for this.
As cult leaders do, you have to follow my bidding, and cult followers will follow what leaders do a lot. They like, oh, this guy is doing this, we need to do that because he wants us to, and we need to listen to him, otherwise our life is not going to be the way it should be.
Yeah, I think he had a doctor, he was having some kind of health issue, the doctors told him he had a stroke,
right?
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, he had a stroke.
All right, so you know,
like his right side basically went numb and whatever and whatnot, but then then he shaves his head and fucking everybody else fucking shaves their fucking heads too. Like, even the females, dude.
Yeah.
Like, shave their head and they're wearing bib overalls and whatnot.
He started wearing overalls.
We're just bald-ass hillbillies. So, you look like... What you look like is a bunch of white trash redneck.
And Chris, that's not why I shaved my head.
Oh, okay? I know it's why you shaved your head. You just refuse to wear your bibs.
Only Manson and them, they shaved their heads.
I know, they did.
So, Joey, I mean, Chuck decides all the married members should get divorced. What was up with that, dude?
To him, he was trying to promote a free love society, and he was saying that the women shouldn't be confined to one person, but should be able to have as many lovers as they want.
He means
him. And, of course, fucking Chuck, He fucking hates kids. He don't got time for no goddamn children. No. He fucking wanted them out of the society. So it was convenient for him that while he's teaching this promiscuity of the women, well, guys, why don't you just get vasectomies? Because then you can't fucking have kids and you can have as much sex as you want, and we're okay now. You know, fucking.
He didn't get a
vasectomy though himself though.
Of course, no, he did not. Of course, dude. I saw that fucking like he'd even like even the dudes that didn't want to get the vasectomy, like he ended up talking them into it, like basically kind of through the game process.
Wow.
And then there would be a doctor ready, prepared in another room, like that way they hadn't. Didn't have a chance to think about it like the next day. Wow. Be like, nah, I thought about it earlier. It's like, nope, there it is, go.
Wow.
I don't know if that's true. I saw it in one place.
Yeah, that's fucked up. That's fucked up. But, you know, this is the 60s and 70s, and it's, you know, kind of the time, I guess. But any children that were brought up in the system originally when they let the kids in there were at the Synanon school, where the parents would hardly even see them, and then any kids born into the cult were separated from their parents almost immediately and raised by, you know, this school. Eventually, Chuck decided he didn't want the kids there, like Joey said, and he insisted on the vasectomies. For the women getting the abortions, he said it was like popping a boil, nothing more.
Dude, I saw that. It's like, that is fucking...
It's fucked up, man.
I also heard where he said, I heard it's more like crapping out a football than anything else.
I did see that. What the fuck?
Goddamn. Man, if you could find an audio clip of that
song
sample, that'd be great.
That would be hilarious. Yeah. He believed that they were taking, you know, way too many resources away from the organization. So he didn't like kids. And, you know, anybody to think a kid being raised in some shit like that would be fucked up. And then, Chris, I think you would have been in the punk squad. Those were the teens that were bad.
Oh,
They put them in punky squad. And they were treated like they were in fucking basic training. I mean... 4 a.m. wake ups, like running, fucking PT, like hardcore.
I didn't see that part, but yeah, that would have been me. I'd be like, fuck you, dude.
But it reminds me of back in the fall of 1991 when I was at Fort Knox, Kentucky, doing U.S. Army basic. Holy shit.
Yeah.
It was also strange that people were so into the idea of the communal living that even people that weren't addicts wanted to live there, and they were called squares. And like other groups, they have their own like lingo, and you know, Scientology is big with that stuff. Like all these little terms
and
weird ways they say things. It's just so fucking bizarre, man. This whole thing is just so weird. The cult thing just kind of freaks me out, you know? It's like the whole control thing, like, that's so
like, how
crazy.
Does somebody get that fucking power up on people like that?
That's just scary shit. But, Chris, you know, things are getting a little stranger here, and I did see they used some of the Synanon people for George Lucas film. Did you see this?
I did not see this, dude. I didn't see it at all.
I never even heard of this movie before. Have you?
THX-1138?
I never heard of it, Joey.
No, I never seen it. It's a George Lucas sci-fi shit he did.
I think it was his first movie, I believe.
And that was...
But they were like actual fucking Synanon members. He used them because they had the shaved head. Like,
right.
They looked exactly like what he was trying to portray.
Right.
That's fucking crazy. I didn't even see this part of it, dude.
And the movie California Split, they were in that too.
Yeah. So. And they made a movie called fucking Synanon.
They did.
Which is like a fucking a 60s fucking pulp movie or whatever. And, you know, it's funny because it shows the addicts living amongst each other is fucking crazy and out of control and shit. Like, it's kind of backwards what they were really trying to say. But, hey, they got a movie made about
it. Yeah, that's interesting. I think there were a couple of name actors in it, too, if I'm not mistaken. Right, yeah. Like, it was a legit, like, major movie.
I haven't seen it, but it is now on my list. I am going to get it and watch it because I'm a sucker for like the old Reefer Madness.
Oh, for sure. So Joey, now things are taking a turn for the worst. Now we're starting to get into some crimes, man. Uh, what What's the deal with this, man? They're starting to go down that road.
Well, as we go down that road, I'm going to put this joint out finally. So I've been smoking on it for however long.
It's been a minute.
So that's a pretty long time. All right. So anyway, yeah, I mean, obviously the whole thing with Colts and why we talk about them is because there's always some dark turning point where they go from, you know, kind of wacky and fucking off the chain to, okay, now you fucking crossed over and now you're into some fucking dangerous territory. And with the fucking sitting on Colt, this came in the form of Roselena Cole. And she was court-ordered, as we talked about before. They would court-order him to go to the Synod.
Right.
She was court-ordered to go there so she could get clean. But the problem was she had never been heard from again.
Right.
And, like, nobody fucking heard, like, her parents or even the court system. So now, obviously, there's going to be an investigation because the only known place that she was at was on their compound.
Yeah. That definitely was the beginning of it all, right? So she had no sign of her, but very suspicious.
Now, this is also, you know, fucking... Is this the time when... maybe not. Yeah, I was going to say fucking Jonestown was coming up. And that was another thing, because after that happened, it fucking also put... We just talked about this fucking before with the Ant Hill murders. Ant Hill kids. But the Jonestown was so fucking big that all of a sudden all these cults started getting fucking targeted by the feds.
People were freaking out. You know, my kid's missing. Right, right. Maybe they're in a cult. You know, that kind of shit. Legitimately, right? So, so you had that Roselena Cole thing just really, you know, started it off. She's not, nobody knows where she's at. And then I also mentioned those military style fucking hits. They're using a group they called the Imperial Marines. They're trained and performing like martial arts that they called Sindo. So that was their own version of martial arts.
Sindo.
Yeah, so kind of funny. Definitely see a commercial maybe for a
that would be fucking actually pretty
martial
dope.
Arts Sindo training.
And Chuck and his fucking posse, they're fucking living it up in a decent-ass nice house and shit.
Right.
And then all the Synanon members are living in, like, fucking army tents out on this fucking grounds and shit. Like, living rough out there. Yeah. Fucking. So, yeah, like, their militant fucking attitude and the way they went about shit was definitely fucking brainwashed and fucking forced into
them. Yeah. I mean, they're just living harsh, but the organization hated lawyers. Chuck hated them because he knew they could cause them lots of problems. And they also dealt with some ranchers, too, and they beat and pistol-whipped one. And, you know, they're dishing out some fucking beating. So these Imperial Marines, I mean, we're laughing and shit, but, I mean, they're legitimately, like, terrorizing people and beating the shit out of people on Chuck's, you know, at Chuck's bidding for people that he feels are enemies, especially attorneys, politicians, people like that. And Chris, it's said they committed 80 violent acts at the hands of Chuck.
I mean, it said they were like just ran, like beating people that were like leaving. They're like, they want to leave.
Right.
See, that's when you know it's a cult, when it goes from you can leave whenever you want to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now you can't leave. Right. It's like motherfucking goddamn Bronx Tale when they shut the door in the bar on the bikers. It's like, now you can't leave.
But I mean, you know, like, I know I poke fun a lot in my writing, you know, about church and stuff, but like, you know, you could go to a Catholic, let's just say a Catholic church, and not come to the next service, and nobody's going to come hunt you down.
Right.
And drag you back screaming. Like, this is fucked up. You're right. I mean, this turns from a normal church organization, whatever you want to call it, like, to something fucked up.
Straight fucked up, dude. And fucking now he's got these guys out there fucking just anybody who wants to leave, you get beat. There was one guy that left, Phil Redder. They beat his ass so bad that they fractured his fucking skull. And he was in a coma for like a few days. Like, I don't remember if it was medically induced or he was just in a coma. But
yeah, it was terrible.
He was in the hospital for a while. For leaving a place.
Right.
Yeah. Like, say you walked out of work one day, and they just come and beat the fucking living shit out of you.
Fracture your skull. Like, that's crazy.
That's a cult.
Things are getting more and more violent. Yeah, it's definitely a full-on cult here. And Joey, this 1978 NBC story about Synanon definitely got people talking. And what do they do to these NBC executives, man?
Man, I'm trying to... I'm still trying to fucking put the correlation together with Jonestown in my head. Because November 1978 is when the Jonestown massacre was, so... we're definitely getting a little bit closer. And I remember whenever they were fucking putting out all the news, the whole reason why the people started going to Jonestown, the reporters and shit, must have been around the exact same time that this was going on with Synanon. So I definitely believe there was a huge fucking crackdown on cults at the time. But anyway, so one of the violent acts that they fucking pulled, which is fucking crazy as shit, was, there was this fucking guy, Paul Marantz, and he was a lawyer, and he was helping with the lawsuit against them from one of the former cult members.
No, right?
I
wish I wrote down names. The lawsuit was because of the woman that went there. She went to a clinic, not a clinic, but a, we'll call it a clinic, not a clinic, but to go get a tranquilizer shot for something. And fucking they suggested that she go to Synanon, so her husband took her there, and then they kept her there.
Oh wow!
Without
then they got the kidnapping charge.
Yeah, fucking.
Or that's what. I do remember that now.
That's the lawyer that brought the lawsuit and won the lawsuit against them.
Right.
So this dude is fucking, you know, and it's possible that he might have represented two different ones. He might have did that and then also had this happen. Anyway, what happened with this dude is he was already fucking, he was scared of this cult. Like, he already knew the fucking things that could go on because he had already been talking to these previous cult members. So he was, like, always looking over his shoulder and that, you know, and this is his words. And then he said fucking one day he was going to fucking watch the Yankees game. He was like, man, I'm just going to fucking enjoy, like, this one bit of time. I'm going to watch this fucking ball game, you know, and goes out all fucking casual to go grab the mail out of the mailbox, reaches in, fucking gets bit on the hand by a goddamn rattlesnake. Yeah. Rattlesnake, it doesn't have the fucking rattle on it anymore, so he never... Yeah, so you can't hear it. I think it was a package or a sack or something. It was in there. And he said it looked like a scarf or something. And he went in and reached and grabbed it and fucking bit like a motherfucker. Like, God damn. And he said, but as soon as he got bit, though, he was fucking calling the cops or fucking telling the neighbors.
Synanon got me.
He said, Synanon got me. I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about, bro?
Who the fuck? Synanon what? You know?
Yeah,
that's crazy. Maybe that's how the guy came up with Cinnabon. You know, he heard him fucking screaming Synanon.
Oh man, now I never eat Cinnabon anyway. So,
so yeah, 4.5 foot fucking rattlesnake. What the fuck?
Yeah, with the rattle cut off. So like,
yeah, so you're not gonna hear it. And Chris, I know you're a snake guy. I mean, how deadly is a bite from a fucking rattlesnake, man?
I mean, they are pretty fucking venomous fucking snakes, man. I mean, there's different breeds of rattlesnakes. I don't know what breed it was, but they're pretty venomous. And it, like, instantly starts to eat away, like, their venom, like, eats away from the inside out. So, like, it instantly starts, you feel it.
Wow.
Instantaneously. I've never been bit by one. I'm just saying.
Yeah, like, it's pretty quick, too. I mean, you don't have a lot of time,
and
right?
If you don't get the fucking anti-venom pretty quick, though, man, the fact that he got to the hospital and spent a couple weeks in the hospital recovering, which he recovered.
Right.
Fucking, like, that was either a really close hospital or his fucking immune system is ridiculous. Hearted.
And that just goes to show the sign of the times. He was in the hospital for two weeks. Nowadays, he would have been at a prompt care.
And they'd be like, they'd
had his ass on the curb by fucking supper time.
Yeah.
No, this was very serious. This was very serious.
It was, and it made fucking national news. Oh, like, yeah. It was really big shit. And Walter Cronkite fucking said, he goes, this is bizarre, even by cult standards. Like, he's like,
that's fucking
great.
That's
fucked up. Yeah, Walter Cronkite dissing on you, that's bad.
Right, hey, real quick, just because it popped in my head. So last week we did the Anthill Kids.
Right.
after we fucking did it, I saw a fucking podcast that I listened to did an episode on, and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna check that. And he starts it off asking the other, he's like, so what's this, what's the closest you've ever been to a cult aside from being a Mormon? And I was like, Jesus Christ.
Oh wow, interesting. So yeah, I mean, the fucking shit that they, you know, found with, you know, following this dude, they're investigating him. And all these recordings of him saying shit like, don't mess with us, you get killed, literally dead.
Yeah, kind of kids.
Sounds like a fucking psychopath. I mean, not a harmless fucking church leader, rehab founder. I mean, what the hell? He even goes on to say, we'll break the lawyer's legs, then his wife's legs, and then we'll threaten to cut their kid's ear off. No more lawyer. That's some incriminating shit. I mean, seriously. And then he goes on to say, I do really want an ear in a glass of alcohol on my desk. Like, what the fuck?
You want an ear in a glass of alcohol?
That's just fucking crazy.
So like Hellcat Mary from Gangs of New York shit.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts. And he gives himself a retirement bonus, $500,000. And back in 77... Chris, that's 2.5 mil, so nice little nest egg there. He's fucking gone and retired, but he's just unhinged. I mean, Joey, this shit is getting wackier. I mean, what is it with this, man?
It's fucking, I don't know, crazy and out of control, but he's got fucking people following him, same way Jim Jones does. I don't know if his, message or his fucking, you know, what he was promising them was so fucking intriguing that they had to stay with him.
Right.
I don't know if they were under a type of hypnosis. I don't know if they were under the influence of drugs and following his lead. That's what I feel more like a Manson thing was.
That's what I was going to say. Some of these guys like Manson and Jim Jones get really into drugs and like it affects their fucking mind. But this guy, I mean,
this dude's whole life started at that acid trip in 1957.
Dude, for real. You think he was still doing acid? I mean, maybe.
Man, not only do I think he was doing it, I feel like
he was dosing people.
The amount of money that dude was making and the things that he was into, plus the fact he was fucking based out of the West Coast, like, I'm pretty sure he had fucking pharmacists and everything. They were making that shit for him. And
right.
He was probably utilizing it. I mean, this is all speculation, but it's a good possibility the acid my parents took in the 70s could have been synonymous with acid. Right. You know?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, really, really interesting with this one. On that, because it doesn't seem like, you know, on the surface, but, you know, he wasn't like a Manson where he's outwardly, you know, talking about smoking pot and stuff like that. This guy was, you know, on the surface, I'm Mr. Squeaky Clean, you know, I'm clean now. And so, but I'm with you guys. I think he was probably still dropping acid.
I think once he took the first hits, dude, he just never stopped. He was tripping his whole life.
I think he got into it too much, so.
And I think he saw it as an awakening for him, because it probably did help him with his alcoholism, which was like the whole initial intent. And so I think for him to be able to use that along with his fucking, you know, power of persuasion to talk to them while they're fucking tripping and shit with at least some of the members, maybe not all of them, I don't know, but there had to have been a good portion of him that he really felt like if that changed his life that much, that he could do that for other people too. And if that's what he was doing for people and opening in their mind to this whole, you know, new thing, they were gaining a bond with him right there because he fucking showed them that, you know. Right. And that's another way that he can control them, because now they look at him as, you know, it's something bigger than life, maybe, for a moment.
Right. No, I think you're right. And, I mean, we were talking just a minute ago about People's Church and Jim Jones. Interestingly enough, two former Synanon members go to Guyana and died in that mass suicide. So
that's kind of crazy.
That's fucked up.
Like, did anybody really die in the Synanon?
Like, I don't believe so. I mean, it was very violent, and the pistol whipping.
There was actually no
the snake bite, but no actual murders.
I mean, there was attempted, but obviously with the snake bite, you're trying to
Shitloads of mayhem.
Shitloads of fucking mayhem.
And the woman who and the woman who disappeared, we don't know what happened to her. So
that's true.
Oh, yeah, there's
that possible there.
So things are starting to fall apart, though. I mean, the two of the members of the Imperial Marines get arrested for the snake incident. And Chuck, you know, there's lawsuits being filed. I mean, things are crumbling. And the fearless leader is now in a fucking mess. His third wife dies in 77. And many say that's when he totally snapped.
Ugh.
And she had kind of been that person to kind of rein him back. And without her, now there's no barrier. Of course, he was a, you know, like you said, Chris, once an addict, always an addict. He goes back to drinking again. And he began organization called The Wire, which was his own radio station, to his members, where he would play tape recordings of members being beaten to scare the rest of them. What the fuck?
Not people getting beaten, but Jim Jones, he also fucking broadcasted his own shit to all his members.
Yes, he did.
Too.
That's true. That's true. So, yeah, I mean, just fucking sick, man. And Chris, it, you know, he falls off the wagon and gets arrested, man.
Yeah, he got arrested 10 months after I was born, December of 1978.
There you go.
He got arrested for that shit, and the two Imperial Marines got a year for the snake shit.
Right.
I mean, a year seems...
pretty light, but they gave up a bunch of shit. They talked.
Right,
that's
right.
That's how they swung those deals.
But, like, that seems like a small amount of time, man.
It does.
Chuck, on the other hand, he was, like, what was he, like, 70-something at this point? I don't remember his
age. I'm not sure.
But, yeah, he ends up just getting some probation.
63.
Yeah, 63 years old.
But he had a lot of health issues.
Yeah, and he's, like, they're, like, the doctors are, like, yeah, if he goes to prison, he's going to die. So, like, he ends up just getting fucking put on house arrest fucking for the rest of his life, basically. That's his house is his prison. I've often wondered.
Like Countess Bathory.
No, do I get to move, though?
I don't know.
If I wanted to go look for a new house and I wanted to move.
You probably have to get clearance to do that, God. I'm guessing.
No, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, $10,000 fine.
Yeah, $10,000 fine and shit. And also not allowed to have any association with Synanon at all.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah, like not allowed to fuck with it.
Stay away.
You can't.
Right. But
because it was still a thing even after his
arrest. Yeah. It lasted for a bit. And Chuck would live nearly another 20 years. So much for him being in such horrible health, but he must have had good lawyers. Paid him a lot of money. He was wealthy. He dies in 1997 at age 83 from multiple strokes. And Synanon struggled without Chuck, and the IRS pulled their tax exemption.
Boom. Yeah.
That's the death knell there.
Now they got to pay back taxes, bro.
Yeah. And they are getting fucking pummeled. And this is what fucking Scientology fears. They didn't have it for a while, but got it back. And so they would crumble without it.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much advantage
not
they
paying
get
taxes.
For not having to pay taxes, you know?
Dude, let Joel Osteen start getting taxed.
That's right. So, you know, I think, you know, it's just bullshit. It's complete fucking bullshit.
It's fucking dumb. No, pay fucking taxes like the rest of the fucking country.
Exactly. We're not asking you to pay more. We're just asking you to
pay your
just
share.
What everybody else does.
Pay your fucking share. So, you fucking on the TV all the goddamn time. Help the children of the world. Help the children of the United States. You help a motherfucker pay taxes like everybody else.
Exactly. No, I agree, dude. I mean, that would lower the rest of our taxes.
Boom.
You know, that's the thing about it. Now, Joey, the IRS said they owed $17 million in back taxes, dude.
Oh, man.
That's going to fucking put a hurt on them. It's 1991, man. What happens, dude?
Yeah, I mean, that's the end of Synanon, basically, in the U.S. at least.
Right. Look this up.
They had to go bankrupt. I mean, there was no recovery from that hit for Synanon at all.
Right.
They weren't that big. $17 million.
No, I'm looking up. You keep talking. I'm going to look up what...
That, well, I was going to say, you know, nobody ever saw a cent of that either.
Right.
Nothing was ever transferred, I'm
probably
sure.
Probably not. I did see, you know, like you were saying, Joey, that it's still active in Germany, which is kind of crazy.
I saw that too.
Just legally, you know, they can be there and not owe that $17 million. Which is, I'm sure, gotten pretty expensive now with all the penalties and all that kind of interest. My God. I saw a very long list of Synanon references. Joey, you mentioned that movie called Synanon. But there's a bunch of them, TVs and movies. The one I did want to mention, though, the Eagles song, Hotel California, supposedly has to do with that. And that whole lyric of "You Can Never Leave," you know, is one indication of that. But, you know, I don't know that that's a fact. But that was an interesting article I read about that. So, yes. You know.
So my phone's slow. I'm sorry. But $17 million in 1991 basically doubled. It's 38 or... Hold on. That's not what I said. Never mind. Fuck off.
It's a lot of money. It's definitely a lot of money. But there are some long-lasting positive things, as I mentioned, in the area of behavior modification. And some of the things they developed through this fucking game we were talking about, and things that they still do in rehab today, the group therapy and all that. So there was some good to come of it. They say 50 to 20,000 people went through it.
Did you remember there was the whole... teenager. Oh, I can't remember what it's called, but these parents would seriously have their kids and like have them come take into these camps that were basically like this, trying to put them in check. It's like hard love. I can't remember what it's called. I'll fucking look it up after we're done. And
all right,
but it's fucking super fucking interesting, man. It's kind of like this.
Interesting, yeah. So, I mean, 15 to 20,000 people is a lot of people that went through Synanon. And, you know, before Synanon, these people would have been considered untreatable by the medical profession at that time. So, I'm not saying now, I'm just saying at that time. So, all right, well, guys, anything to add to this crazy fucking story? Old Chuck Diedrich and the Church of Synanon.
I got nothing.
Joey, anything?
The only thing I'll add is that Chuck Diedrich, growing up in the 419 here in Toledo,
right.
he was brought up fucking strict Roman Catholic.
Right.
And I guess he read a copy, his dad had a copy of H.G. Wells' The Outline of History. And he read that one night, and then, like, overnight, he was a fucking militant atheist.
I did see that, dude.
I forgot to mention that in the notes. Yeah, I did see that, too.
So that book fucking definitely has an influence on what he ended up doing from his roots, maybe.
That is interesting, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. Thanks. All right, well, I did my research watching a couple good documentaries on YouTube. I also read that chapter in the book Joey gave me, Cults Uncovered by Emily Thompson. That's been a go-to this whole month, man. It's good stuff in there. So if you're a true crime fan, that's a good one on cults. There's some stuff out there on this. I mean, if you want to do it. I did finally get to that Netflix show, How to Be a Cult Leader. It was really good. Peter Dinklage produces and does the voice, narrator part for it. It's great. He's fantastic. He's got a sense of humor with the cult thing, you know, so it's cool.
It's Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, it's done very well.
He drinks and he knows things.
Yeah, I mean, he's just awesome. So it's really well worth watching. And there's also one, How to Be a Tyrant. And they're all Pol Pot and Mao Zedong and all that shit. It's good. So next week, we're going to continue this cult episode, Insanity, with one last one. I saved a good one for last, and we really wanted to work it out this way because, Chris, when I told you we were going to do an episode the Church of the Lamb of God,
fuck yeah,
you had an idea of how you wanted to do this with the metal segment, And so, right,
of course, I mean, how could it not work out?
Right. So it worked out the way it did, that this had to be the last one of the month for it to happen. So the Church of the Lamb of God is going to be crazy. Their leader, Avril LaBaron. I mean, this dude is so fucking insane.
Avril Lavigne, really?
The Mormon Manson. I mean, this dude was sending out hit squads, not with rattlesnakes and pistols, or pistols, but they were like blowing people away. Like two shots in the chest, one in the forehead.
Fuck yeah.
All of them. All over the country they were doing this shit. This is really off the chart stuff. So the Church of the Lamb of God, it's going to be good. And this is the whole blood atonement thing. That the only way you could be saved from your sin is to spill your blood. So they're doing you a favor by killing you, because they're allowing you to atone.
Right.
It's fucked up. And it's a good one.
You obviously got to know what Chris's metal segment's going to be.
That's right.
Obviously. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, obviously, it's this was behemoth.
A lot of time, I mean, there's some things that are not, like, every time, shit's not planned. This time, we planned it.
Exactly. So that'll be good. You don't want to miss that shit next week. Joey, page a day for us anywhere? Page a day.
I only got one of them, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, we're an hour and 15 on fucking Synanon. Yeah. I mean, honestly, pretty good.
Hell yeah.
Pretty good one. So go ahead.
We love the Colts.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, so this one is about the case of Buck versus Bell. In 1927, the Supreme Court case determined that a Virginia state statute allowing forced sterilization for unfit people, including those with intellectual disabilities, did not violate due process as outlined in the 14th Amendment. It was a sweeping 8-1 decision that set a precedent that allowed for the eugenics movement, which was popular in the U.S. at the time, to continue thriving with government oversight. The case involved the forced sterilization of Carrie Buck. She was an unmarried 18-year-old who had been committed to the Virginia State Colony for Epileptics and the Feeble-Minded on the grounds of promiscuity, because she had been raped by her foster mother's nephew and became pregnant.
Oh, that was her fault?
Yeah, right?
Right. Buck's foster family adopted her baby, born in 1924, and Buck was eligible for forced sterilization under Virginia's 1924 Eugenical Sterilization Act. The Supreme Court concurred, saying such sterilizations protected the state.
Wow.
Buck, mother, and her daughter, who was 3 years old at the time, they were all pronounced feeble-minded and promiscuous, and the Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes declared three generations of imbeciles are enough.
Oh my God.
She was sterilized on October 9th.
Wow.
That's brutal as fuck.
That is. Jesus.
So then Buck sterilized on October 19th, 1927. So now the Buck versus Bell decision technically still stands right now. It's never been overturned. It was partially reversed in 1942 by Skinner versus Oklahoma, which was a case involving Jack T. Skinner, and he was sentenced to forced sterilization under Oklahoma's 1935 Habitual Criminal Sterilization Act after his fourth criminal conviction. Now, Skinner was the second person to be sentenced to the sterilization under the act, but the first one, he had escaped prison before the procedure. He's like, fuck this, I'm out, and he left. The Supreme Court decided unanimously that Skinner's sentence violated due process as outlined in the 14th Amendment. The ruling covered only punitive sterilization of convicted criminals, not sterilization of intellectually disabled people outlined in Buck versus Bell. But the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 offers protection to disabled people, and Buck versus Bell is often cited as one of the worst Supreme Court decisions of all time.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. Jesus Christ, that's fucked up. That's fucked up.
Just weird to see how, like, fucking shit's looked at one point in time. How it's changed.
Very much so. I don't know if you guys have been following that sixth wife murder case. It's a good one. We'll probably get to it eventually. But yeah, this fucking guy is out there. But it's quite the trial going on right now. So Arranged to have a hit.
See, like a male Black Widow.
He had, well, multiple wives died under mysterious circumstances.
Right.
The current one, the one he's on trial for, the sixth, there's like four that died mysteriously. He keeps getting away with it. He was actually acquitted on one. This one, he hires a guy to kill her, and then he kills him. So they...
What's his name?
You would ask me that. It's a real average sounding name. I can't. It's like not memorable. That's why I have a hard time remembering.
Sixth wife killer.
Thomas. Yeah, it'll come to me. But yeah, sixth wife murder. You'll find everything you want on that. But it's a good one. It's a good one. And they got some interview stuff with him too, Joey. Some police interrogation shit.
And that's what I was curious if I've already seen it. Yeah, so it'd be
There's some good interrogations.
Oh, Thomas Randolph.
There you go. That's it.
2017.
That's it.
No, yeah, we're off on a tangent, but no, yeah, we should definitely do that.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. All right. Well, we have done our fair share of murdering tonight. I think it's time to crank up that metal. So, Joey, what the fuck do we need to do?
Let's get our metal on.
Just because CK has passed on, he's not done educating the masses. CK will forever be the great metal motherfucker. We're here to stomp poser ass and eradicate the planet of their kind. CK has passed the torch to us, and we will forge the fuck on. In CK's name, we will bestow metal knowledge upon all of you.
All right, forever in the memory.
Hey, who's the great metal motherfucker?
CK.
Fucking right.
Chris Kovacs. Long live the great metal motherfucker. And we keep this going in his memory because that's what he would have wanted. So we take turns passing the horns around. It's my turn. I got the horns. That means I pick who we're going to cover or what we're going to cover tonight, and I went with a band that I just stumbled upon and fucking digging on it. Man Must Die. Love the name. These guys started out as a band in 2002, so they've been around 21 years. They're technically, or they're, you know, categorized as technical death metal, but I don't really think that totally covers it. There's a little bit of hardcore and punk, which isn't really my thing. But it's very minor, but you could definitely feel it in the in their some of their transitions that I thought I could hear it. But it definitely more death metal than anything. Unbelievably talented, very original, high energy band. Any of the live shit, they're like all over running around, and it's really cool. They're based in Glasgow, Scotland. The vocalist Joe McGlynn and Alan McFarland, he was the guitar player. Those are the two original members that are still in the band today. The first album, gotta love this, guys, Start Killing.
Start fucking killing, man.
2004, they got signed to Relapse and released The Human Condition in 2007. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe when I interviewed Joe, he said the first two albums were produced by JF from Cataclysm.
That's badass.
I believe that's what he said. But that second one was on Relapse. Then this one is absolutely intense. No Tolerance for Imperfection. That was the one I played last week, the Skin It, Kill It, Skin It, Wear It.
Yeah, Kill It, Skin It, Wear It.
Good stuff. That was 2009. And then Peace Was Never an Option in 2013. The Gagging Order EP in 2019. And the latest, The Pain Behind It All in 2023. So they've just been pumping them out. Joe and Alan are currently joined by Michael Allen on guitar, James Wright on bass, and Tony Corio, my Italian friend, on drums. This dude is fucking insane. I mean, absolutely insane. And he is an Italian, a Scottish Italian. So We were laughing about that because Joe said, you know, Italians are kind of feisty, he said. And Scots are known to be like that. So this guy's got it coming from both sides.
Right, he's just like...
Pretty funny, but what a drummer. I mean, my God, listen to that new album and you'll be blown away at how good this dude is. This is a six-minute clip I'm going to play from the interview that I did with Joe. And so you can get a little taste of how that went down here. Check this out. I love this, to throw a wrench in the works here, Joe, with a wacky question. But this one, if you had to pick one of the following to die in a man must die mosh pit, would it be A, Justin Bieber, B, Kim Kardashian, or C, any member of the band Nickelback?
Yeah,
and you're not going to get sued or anything, you know. Like this, this would just be like just a funny, like.
There's probably other people that would prefer to die over those three, but
okay.
But I have to pick those three, any one of those three. I've got to say the Kardashian.
Kardashian. It's funny you say that. I've had a few people say that.
They're just
awful.
They're just. The worst in humanity. They're just they the are. Worst type of people. Yeah.
But if you
Justin,
had...
Justin Bieber's just a kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Hard to pick on him. But as you said, you had another one to throw in there that you would rather have get trampled in the mosh pit.
Yeah. Oh, there's loads. let me think. There's a guy called Piers Morgan, who's a...
Oh, yeah.
I guess he's a journalist in the UK. I can't fucking stand him. I hate him. So I'd probably have him murdered in the pit.
Yeah, we did a show one time and a kid stage dove and nobody caught him and he landed on his neck and they were like backboarding him out of there and all I could think of was we're going to get sued. Thankfully, he was okay. But man, you know, we're joking around about it. But I mean, when that kind of stuff happens, it's scary. And there was that incident... I did an interview with the band Skeletal Remains, and they went on that Morbid Angel tour, and I almost went to the show. It was only a couple hours from me where the roof collapsed.
Roof collapse, yeah.
Yeah, that was scary, and me and my son almost went. So, yeah, that was fucking incredible to have happen, and just so sad with that family. But
absolutely, yeah.
You don't go to a metal show and expect to have that happen. So
no, not at all.
Now, what's behind the band's name? I got to say, when I was searching, I did a Google search for best death metal albums of 2023. Just wanted to see if there's anything I missed. I saw you guys in that list, and the name was like, that's cool. I want to check that out. But what is it with the name? Is there something behind it, or is it just a cool name?
It was actually Alan, the guitar player, that came up with it. I think, if I remember correctly, he was watching, it was like a court case, you know, on television. He's live, you know, when they take the cameras in.
Yeah.
And it's basically, you know, in court. And something happened where one of the members of the family of somebody who'd either died or been murdered or whatever, the person who was, you know, up in trial for doing this crime, one of the people in the family stood up and started shouting at the man, that man must die, that man must die. And Alan, our guitar player, had seen this, and it stuck in his head, and he brought it forward, and it was between that and a bunch of other band names that I can't remember, and we just settled on that because it was the best one out of the shitty ones that we had.
It's a good one. It got my attention, and that's all that matters, right? You get somebody's attention. Because, you know, I'm looking through, and I remember we played with a band one time that was so badass, and I asked them what their name was, and the guy told me, and I laughed right in his face. Because it was so ridiculous. It was Burning Love Letters. I'm like,
Jesus,
dude, come on, man. Like, seriously. Yeah, no, so there is something to the name. I mean, it just, I don't know. It sounds hollow or shallow, but I need a cool band name. I can get behind Man Must Die. Fucking dig
cool,
it.
Man.
Now, what was your first heavy metal concert, and did that have any bearing on you getting into metal?
Well, I can tell you my first actual concert, and it was Status Quo. I don't know if you know that band.
Oh yeah,
old rock band. My dad took me to see them because my dad was a fan of them. I was already into rock music at this point, but he took me to that. That would have been about, I'm going to say 89 or 1990, one of the two. So I would have been about 11 or 12. But the first actual heavy metal concert I went to was Metallica on the Black Album tour in 1992, I think it was.
That's cool.
They played in Glasgow, and it was amazing. Obviously, I saw them, in my opinion, the last time they were actually a good band, so I was quite happy about that.
Well, I always like to tell the bands I interview what my first concert was. Now, you said you're in your 40s. I'm 56, so I got you by a few years. My first concert was the Kinks. I had a guy on my paper route,
cool.
Had an extra ticket. I went with him. Yeah, it was cool. My first metal concert, I think later that year or earlier the next year, because it was March of 83, Iron Maiden, Peace of Mind, which was freaking incredible. I saw Metallica 1984 on Ride the Lightning with Cliff Burton.
Oh, that would have been fucking amazing.
And he was an arm's length away from me, and that amazing. Was when I started playing bass, too. So I was like... So there you go. That was a fun conversation with Joe. Really good dude. 43 minutes, and that will be released in its entirety as a bonus episode the day after this one comes out. So Friday, August 18th. And the video, which I'm doing the final touches on today, that will be available also on Friday on the YouTube channel. So go subscribe to that. All right, Joey, Lost Classic. What you got?
All right. Like I said earlier, my Lost Classic's not so much a Lost Classic as it's probably unknown to most people. But I'm going back to 2003 in the band Beyond the Flesh from New Jersey.
Hell yeah.
And their album, What the Mind Perceives. Now, this is a fucking like melodic death metal, fucking pretty hard driving, badass as fuck. 10 tracks, I believe. It was mastered and mixed down at Morrisound Studios in Tampa. Chuck Schuldiner, I think, was the producer on this album.
Oh, wow.
So, definite huge ties right there. Unfortunately, the band didn't do too much else. I think they put out a split and maybe one more full-length and then split up. But I got to catch them live at Milwaukee Metal Fest in, like, 2004 or 3 or something.
Oh, cool.
The last one before they brought it back this year. But, man... That band was fucking awesome. So 2003, Beyond the Flesh, What the Mind Perceives. Go check that shit out.
I definitely will check that out. Yeah, definitely. Anything out of Morrisound can't be bad, right? So there you go. What have you been listening to lately, Chris? I know you say you listen to a lot of stuff, but anything jumping out at you tonight?
Nope. Because I went to the show, fucking Coal Chamber, Mudvayne.
Right.
Some Guar or whatever, because I've been jamming them shits. So, like, that show was fucking pretty dope.
Yeah, good show.
Yeah, it was pretty dope. I didn't get there for the first two bands because work issues and travel and whatnot. But so I missed Butcher Babies and fucking Nonpoint. But got there basically right when Guar was getting on stage. Guar was the fucking shit. You could never fucking... You can never grow.
They're amazing live. That's for sure. Man.
Like, and it was Courtney's first time ever seeing Guar, and she's like, "No, we got to do the." Like,
it was full on fucking Guar. Yeah, it was spraying full shit.
Spraying shit. Everything. Had a great fucking time. Got up there in the middle. Got covered. Great ass time. Fucking Guar. My personal favorite set was fucking Coal Chamber. Honestly, they fucking sounded. Fucking amazing to me, man. Fucking Dez was still fucking on.
You're not the only person I've heard that from.
Like, Coal Chamber was on point, dude. Like, great fucking set. It was an amazing show. And then, obviously, Mudvayne, they do their Mudvayne shit, and I loved it. Fucking awesome set. Nothing against them, just saying. Coal Chamber was my favorite set of the three that I saw. Fucking great ass show. Ran into a lot of people that I fucking know. Fucking, we threw out a bunch of fucking Murder Metal Mayhem business cards to people.
Hell yeah.
Me, Courtney, ran into Bonesaw and Sandage, fucking handed them some. They tossed them out and fucking just. Awesome. It was a good ass fucking time, man.
Very cool. That's cool. Very good. Joey, what about you, dude? What you been jamming lately?
Morbid Angel Covenant. Was jamming the fuck out of that album for a while. I don't know, quite a bit of shows. Jamming some fucking Flesh Order, because shout out to them guys and my homie fucking Mike, the guitarist, because they got fucking, they're on a 3-show, or I think 4-show run right now with Pantera and Lamb of God down south. So he's playing with Flesh Order, though. He used to play with Phil with the Anselmo and the Illegals band.
Yeah, yeah.
But his band Flesh Order, which is fucking straight up brutal death metal, it's cool as fuck because they're on Housecore Records, which is Phil's label. And so for him to fucking throw them on as the headline and act for these fucking big shows that they're doing down south, you know, it's pretty fucking cool.
Tight. So, that is really cool.
Jamming the Flesh Order.
That's cool. I've been jamming that.
We all have mouthfuls.
Yeah, we're
I killed mine while fucking Pete was talking about. Fuck.
yeah, that's the problem with doing the segment is I didn't get to finish my Pop-Tart. All right, well, I've been listening to that new Cataclysm, Goliath. It's fucking badass. Another one, too, Temple of Dread. I'm not too familiar with them, but love that new one, Beyond Acheron. Fucking killer, old-school death metal stuff. Just a lot of shit out there, but I was really busy with the show, the Painted Wraith event, so I was tied up and didn't get to listen maybe as much as I normally would, you know. Chris, you got the horns next, dude. Any idea who you're going to do?
I mean, what are we doing for the fucking goddamn murder segment?
Gee, I wonder why.
So, yes, since we're doing Church of Lamb of God, I'm doing Lamb of God.
Right.
I know most people listen to metal know them, but I'm still going to talk about it anyway. Whatever.
It's the obvious, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got to make it work, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I will be doing Lamb of God next week.
Hell yeah. So, Joey, what's the latest with the distro and Goremonger?
Man, a lot of shit in the works. I got both the Flowered CDs out of Texas available. We're going to do a 4-way fucking. That'll be available for Gordon the Heart of Texas. I'm playing that. I'll talk more about that like as it gets closer. But I also got the new Goremonger Evil Dead EP, which has all 3 tracks with my buddy Braxton from Between the Killings on it. Whenever I put out my last full-length Horrorflix 3, he wasn't able to get me his guest vocal for the third track, so I just put it out with my own. So I was like, man, I still want to put it out, though, because he had been on the first two, right. You know, and a fucking, like, a thing that we did. So when he sent me the vocals for it, I was like, you know what? I was like, even though it didn't make it on the full-length, I'm going to make something special out of it. So I'm putting out an EP. I got it pressed. I should have the CDs anytime, but it's got all 3 of the Evil Dead tracks with him. It's got a exclusive intro track for the EP, and I also included my track with my vocals from the last album.
Fucking
so, 5 tracks, nothing big, but more of a collector's item, so I'll have those.
Yeah, very nice. Cool, very cool. Good to hear you doing shit.
I did see, I don't know if you saw this, but next month, September 27th, right here in Bloomington at the Coliseum, is going to be Megadeth and Biohazard.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Megadeth and Biohazard in Bloomington. I'm pumped. Oh, man. I don't want to have to murder kids.
All right. Well, we have definitely done plenty of fucking metal tonight, but Joey, what the fuck do we need to do?
Let's get our mayhem on, boys.
Yeah. about that food truck taking Baltimore by storm? Matheny Barbecue and More.
They've got the tastiest barbecue in town. I love their unique sandwich. Names like the Crunchy Caucasian, the Spicy Southern, or my favorite, the Hungry Human.
Owner Joe Matheny says he puts a lot of love into every sandwich he sells.
Only the freshest bodies. I mean, meat. It's sold at Matheny Barbecue and More. Find our truck on the corner of Bloody Rare Parkway and Cannibal Lane 7 days a goddamn week.
Oh, man. That's bringing me back. Matheny Barbecue Matheny commercial. Shit. 2020 is when we did that one. Wow, it sounds like forever ago. Crazy Mike in there. Fucking great Chris doing the fucking Matheny, and then Dan Steinlich doing the...
And that was only 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's weird. And how about before that, Man Must Die with the song Patterns in the Chaos. Those guys are fucking insane. Definitely digging on it. So go check them out. I'll link to them in the episode description. They got a Big Cartel site with all kinds of good merch. And they also have a band camp, so you can help them out either way. All right, none of us have any mayhem stories.
I don't have anything tonight. Like, yeah. Like I said, I had thought of something when I was at work, a story when I was busy. I was like, God, remember that. Fucking remember it. And I don't.
I know. I've had that happen to me, too. But I did want to talk about how the Painted Wraith event went. It was amazing. It was their 2-year anniversary. They had this street party, whatever they street festival they called it.
No, they blocked off the whole street downtown and said, fuck you, yeah. We're partying.
Yeah, 30 vendors, I think there was. And
is that it?
You know,
I thought it looked like more than...
Was it more?
I don't know.
I thought that's what it was, but it was really cool, and the weather was perfect. It was like low 80s. You know, it was a little warm at times, but, you know, it was... It could have been so much, you know, worse. So
yeah.
We really made a great situation there. And the Latino Dream, Juan Molina stopped by from Blessed With Pain. Awesome to see him. And lots of people I hadn't seen in a long time. So it was really, really cool. Dustin Holt was there talking about him going pro on the darts.
Dude,
it's fucking
props
amazing.
Props to fucking Dustin, dude.
Yeah, that's really
what he
cool.
does for a living now. He throws darts, traveling the world.
Yeah, yeah, it's props pretty cool. Dustin, he's been all dude. Over the world. We talked a lot about it. So that was really, really, really cool. I had both the Murder Metal Mayhem forearm and the one with my name carved in it. So, Chris, you know, that's always a favorite with the little
motherfuckers,
kids.
Dude, that one kid... like right at the end, like he's looking, he's like, can I get one of these for my birthday, mom? Remember, you wrote Tony's fucking email address on the back of one of your bookmarks.
Right.
And the kid's just like, can I get one? This kid had to be what, like fucking 7, 8 years old?
Something like that. Yeah, they love that. And I brought Spike with me too. Yep. So yeah, that was a big favorite. And so that was fun. And Mike and Stephanie Stoltz, though, from the Painted Wraith, did such an amazing job putting that together. Very professionally set up. Great detailed instructions. Very yes. organized. They were great. They were out with the vendors with ice water, like bottled ice water, like every hour. I mean, they were really good about taking care of everybody. So that was super cool. And that place was fucking packed. The entire time I was there. I mean, when I went in to go to the bathroom, it was wall-to-wall people in there.
Right.
And they were not there to use the bathroom because they were closed for everybody but the vendors. These were people buying shit, so that's awesome. So they must have done really well, and that's great. And my son Joe was there helping me set up, and then Chris, you and Courtney came out with the youngest Shawback Spawn.
Yeah, we had Lily with us. And her, Joey, Lily's got a boyfriend now.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy, yeah. So it was cool, and, you know, great team effort. My daughter's boyfriend, Al, helped on the teardown. It was just great to have the help, so I appreciate it. Chris and both of us, you know, it was cool. We got to meet a lot of people, and there was a lot of great people there. Now, it was funny, after my sister heard I sold 44 books at this thing, she sent me a text and said, just think 44 people won't be able to sleep tonight.
Nah,
so I was like, that's pretty good, Dina. So that's pretty good. So so yeah, it was great. Definitely want to do another one of those. Do that. I would do that quite often if they were like that. That was just couldn't have gone any better. So it was great. All right. Well, we have got a killer cage.
Were you going to talk about William Friedkin?
I thought I mentioned that last week, so I thought that was, but maybe I missed it.
Oh, maybe we did talk about it. Okay, yeah, I was going to.
When I saw it, I thought that it was left over from last week. I forgot to delete it.
No, you're right. We did. We talked about it because I brought up Bug. Yeah. But anyway, fucking. Since then, Stephanie had never seen The Exorcist before. So
like ever?
We watched that. No, she had never seen it. Holy like ever. Shit. So I was like, hell yeah, we got to watch that. So we watched The Exorcist. That was fucking dope. And then I was like, okay, now we got to watch Exorcist 3. I was like, because that's the real prequel, too. I was like, that's a good one, you know. And right. we fucking watched that. And then the other day, we were both busy doing shit, so we weren't really watching it. But I put on Exorcist 2 just because I knew it was way more cheesy and shitty, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I was like, maybe since it's been a while since I watched it, maybe I'll like it this time, you know? And I was like, man, this is still such a horrible movie.
Yeah, it is really bad.
Number three?
Yeah. No, number two. Well, yeah, number three is good.
Number three is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's cool.
Fucking Dahmer motherfuckers.
Killer cage match, guys. We got one to get to tonight. That's where we get a list of 100 objects, 100 killers, and they're just fighting to the death. And our listeners help us provide those random numbers. Chris, who do we want to say?
Yeah,
thanks?
Once again, we got Cody Durst, Justin Morris, and Jeff Ignatowski.
Fuck yeah. Thank you, gentlemen. And we got another beauty going on tonight, Joey. I mean, this should be interesting with this pairing. Who is fighting to the death?
Fucking Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, and he's going to go up against fucking Lizzie Borden and hack you up with an axe.
Damn. Maybe. Ouch. They're going to have a couple of objects, Chris, and this is interesting.
They're going to have a glass Coke bottle, like the old school glass Coke bottles.
Right.
Like Coca-Cola, right. Not Coke 2 or anything like right. that. And then they're going to have a pint of McCormick's. Huh. Interesting.
A pint of McCormick's whiskey. Okay. Huh. And the variable, Joey, is kind of funny, too.
Mr. Leahy from the Trailer Park Boys after drinking a fifth of rye.
Damn. So we got some drunk people. Are going to be in here, and the song playing is "Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap," of course, by AC/DC. So I'm not complaining about that. That's a good one. So this one should be interesting tonight. We got David Berkowitz going up against Lizzie Borden with a glass old school Coca-Cola bottle and a pint of McCormick's whiskey, and we got Mr. Leahy from the Trailer Park Boys after drinking a fifth of rye. Staggering about, and the song playing, "Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap." Chris,
dude, Berkowitz is just like, look at this bitch over here. I'm gonna fucking kill her, dude. Lizzie, she's got her axe. And now they're in their prime, so they have their weapons, the axe and the pistol, right?
Does she have the bucket of bloody fucking rags from her menstrual blood? Does she have them available?
No.
I was just curious.
Just the axe.
All right. I'm just curious.
Berkowitz has the pistol. So fucking they look at each other in the corner, in their perspective corners, and fucking they look at each other. They see that Coke bottle and that bottle of whiskey. And fucking meanwhile, Leahy, he's in the fucking goddamn sideline. He's just drinking that goddamn fucking fifth of rye, dude. He's just like, now the liquor's talking. And fucking, he's got dirty deeds coming to his head. Lizzie Borden goes at Berkowitz with her axe. Fucking, he's like, I gotta get that whiskey. That way I can lay down Leahy, because he needs that whiskey. Fucking, she comes at him, but Berkowitz, fucking goddamn, he comes at him with Lizzie with the pistol, and he just starts shooting her. He kills Lizzie. So now, Berkowitz is trying to get, he's going to go grab that fucking whiskey. And that way he can give it to Leahy to calm his ass down because he's getting riled up. He's about to get naked, pull his dick out, fucking.
Oh, damn.
He doesn't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, it's Leahy.
It's fucking, the liquor's talking, man.
Right.
So fucking Berkowitz is like, I'm going to grab that whiskey and this is going to be my friend. Meanwhile, here, out of the fucking back corner, here I come. I'm fucking drunk. I need more fucking goddamn McCormick's whiskey in my life. I jump in the ring and I fucking take that fucking glass Coke bottle. I smash it against fucking goddamn fucking Berkowitz's head and I just split it open and he just starts bleeding and I just start stomping his face. And then me and Leahy, we enjoy that whiskey together because the liquor's talking.
All right. What about Lizzie Borden, though?
Oh, Berkowitz done shot her, dude.
Okay. All right. All right. Joey, what do you think here, dude?
I think what's going to happen, fucking, first off, the fucking AC/DC's blaring on our speakers. Dirty D's Dunder Chief. That's a classic right there.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody fucking, every dirtbag in the world loves that motherfucking song. Right. That's a Chatsworth anthem. Chatsworth, Illinois anthem.
Yes, sir. Just like,
but anyway,
every should... white trash place in the world, just like pour some sugar on me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so that shit's fucking blaring. So that's setting the tone for what we got going on tonight. Leahy's in that motherfucker. He's already drank his fucking rye. He is fucking pissed. He's drunk. He's wanting to party. He don't know what he fucking wants, but he knows he don't need to be in this goddamn cage right now. He needs to be back in the goddamn trailer park taking care of business.
Yes, sir.
But fucking, we got fucking Lizzie Borden sitting there, and she's fucking like, goddamn, I better grab this fucking Coke bottle real quick, because that'll hold a little bit of menstrual blood that I can fucking throw in there. And Berkowitz is like, well, fuck it, I'll grab the McCormick, because I need to drink something to get this goddamn dog out of my head that keeps fucking talking to me. Even over the sound of Dirty Deeds Done,
he's still hearing it.
Get the goddamn dog out of his goddamn
still
head.
Still hearing it.
So, they're about to fucking go to war. They're like, fuck it, we gotta fight to the death. We know we got to, so we gotta make the best of what we got. And they're about to fight, but all of a sudden, during the fucking breakdown, fucking Leahy, he's just fucking air guitaring and fucking screaming the wrong words like a motherfucker right. In Dirty Deeds.
Oh, yeah.
And he is
dick
doing, it's like, yeah, and it's like he's doing an impression of Jim Brewer when he was doing an impression of ACD or
right,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Jim Brewer. Ow, yeah, that shit was fucking hilarious.
That shit was so good, dude.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so fucking, it's like Leahy is so fucking wasted singing AC/DC, sounding like Jim Brewer singing AC/DC is what I'm getting at. And fucking Berkowitz and fucking Borden, they're just sitting there like, holy fuck, this is some of the craziest shit they've ever seen. But we gotta fucking fight. Fucking Berkowitz fucking slams that fucking, that whiskey. Fucking Lizzie Borden slams that glass of Coke, because I'm just guessing there's Coca-Cola in there since it's Coke glass. Both of them fucking reach down, smash the fuck out of the fucking bottles.
Nice.
Berkowitz is pissed, though, because he don't realize McCormick's some cheap-ass shit.
It's
not glass.
Bottle.
It's goddamn plastic. So now he's like, what the fuck am I going to do?
Nice.
Lizzie Borden's all over that, because she knows that was some fucking cheap-ass shit. So she has her broken-ass fucking Coca-Cola glass, and she starts fucking plunging in fucking Berkowitz's neck, just fucking stabbing in his fucking arterial spray.
Damn.
It's magnificent. Leahy is fucking headbanging in the arterial spray.
Does he hear a dog barking in the distance as he's fucking dying?
Man, that works too. So fuck yeah, but that's the case.
The Leahy's getting sprayed. Fucking yeah.
Wow.
I love it, man. Good story, man. Good story.
That's a good one. Killer cage match, man. That's what the listeners love to hear. And it is fun doing it, so thanks, everybody.
I didn't even violate Lizzie Borden, and usually I would.
That's right. Right. You definitely.
I kept it PG-13.
You did, tonight. You did. All right.
Ish.
An update on the Creation of Chaos project. The audiobook is done. Just doing some final edits now and running the software checks and everything. First submittal to ACX, that's the website that gets it to Audible and iTunes and all that. Or Apple, hoping to have it ready in September. Brian's does we have to redesign the covers to fit for the audiobooks, and the physical book is out on August 25th. So that's coming up. So order yours today, PeteAltieri.com. I'll link to that in the episode description. You could pick up any of my books. I got them on sale to the end of the month for a summer sale, about 10%, 15% off everything. So go on and do that. I don't have a big stock left after that big Painted Wraith event, man, knocked me out of a lot of stuff. So I still have books, but I'm definitely much fewer after that. So,
dude, 44, though, that was dope, man.
That was really cool. That was really cool.
Hell yeah.
I think I had four or five sold before they even started. I mean, before 10 o'clock when it started, I already had several sales already. I'm going to be doing some cross promotion with Sick Rick Masks. Definitely excited about this. And excited, Chris, we're going to have number 11 in here. A number 11.
Anton LaVey, baby.
Sick Rick Mask. Oh, Anton yeah. LaVey, but the Black Pope fucking version with the That's Baphomet right. on his fucking forehead.
So good.
The horns. I mean, it's going to be sick. And we got the spot, Chris. I mean, I'm looking at it right now with Dominus and the inverted cross stand, which he doesn't sell those anymore. And he gets collectors that ask him if there's any around. So
the inverted cross stand,
he doesn't have them anymore. So he was suggesting I get the wall mount and then put LaVey on the wall mount and then maybe switch him up and put LaVey on the inverted cross and then Dominus up on the...
It's so evil. I love it.
So yeah, but when we refer to Dominus, we're talking about the Black Metal, Venom's Black Metal cover, the demon on there, or the monster on there, the evil dude. So yeah, that's what we're talking about. All right, so go to Sick Rick Masks, because what he's going to be doing, if you buy one of these LaVey masks from him, he's going to give you an exclusive. It's a free audio version of my story, One Night with the Blood Countess, which is, of course, about Elizabeth Bathory. And that's going to be in my Creation of Chaos 4 book. And you're going to get that exclusive when you buy the mask from sickrickmasks.com. So he also has a Facebook page where he keeps people updated, cool pictures. He's got every variation.
So yeah.
Yeah, I've been the flesh-colored ones, and the red one was fucking badass.
The red one was tight. That's what I thought you were going to get. But then
I was, too, until I saw that fucking black one.
Yeah, dude, that's I was like, oh, that's fucking nasty.
Yeah,
dude.
That's nasty as fuck. So I'm psyched for that. And so go check it out. He's got such a great selection. I mean, we've got 11 of them, so we got all the serial killer ones, of course, but... And then doing this one, going in hand in hand with our Venom Black Metal mask. Yeah, yeah. So, all right, our website, murdermetalmayhem.com. We've got a web store on there. You can save 25% off on the 666 Club, so check it out. And our YouTube channel, you could subscribe to that, and you'll know when we're going to do when we post new content.
You never know when.
That's right. But it'll be more now. My schedule definitely going to be changing here with the day job, so definitely going to be a much different situation very soon. I think, though, we have done...
Hey, don't quit your day job.
I'm not. I think we've done plenty of mayhem tonight, so let's hit that fucking outro.
Of land in the northern wilderness, unattainable vast terrain in the chilling cold I sank into the hold of a ship and wrote their misery. Upon the convict's arrival, frostbitten and covenant lies, prisoners impelled to forge.
Fuck yeah, man, some war fact. The song Left to Rot. That's what inspired our episode on the Road of Bones there that we did.
That's, that's
right. When I interviewed their bass player, he talked about that song and what it was about. And I was like, oh, that's such a cool topic for us to cover. And then we ended up doing that bonus episode on the Road of Bones. But yeah, Warfecht, Swedish band.
I don't know
what
episode it was. I wish I did.
Yeah, I don't know. But those guys, really great band. I'm hoping they got something coming out soon, because that was the last album that that they had a couple years ago. Bumper music tonight, Joey. Who did we play?
Tonight for bumper music, we had fucking Warfecht, Man Must Die, and Necronesis. Necrokinesis.
Sorry. Yeah. It's when you look at it, it's more like it's a strange word, and I had the same problem with it, but killer band. The metal segment, Chris, the intro music.
For the metal segment? Oh, it's always the great metal motherfucker.
You know it. You got to.
Chrysix fucking throwing it out Chrysix. There, man.
And the Murder Metal Mayhem intro music is Crawl Space by Low 12. Thanks to all of you guys out there listening. Keep seeing the numbers. I mean, just awesome, and we appreciate it very much. I don't know what's up, but thank you, those of you that have been listening, new people.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys fucking checking it out, for real.
Yeah, and we got some good comments here, Chris. Why don't you start it out?
We got motherfucking Heathen Child 55 says, you guys crushed it with the Anthill Kids. That was one of the most fucked up things I've ever heard. And that's saying a lot. So I think
that sums it up for about all of us,
yeah,
right?
I mean, for real, like me myself, that kind of sums it up. Yeah. Like, I've seen a lot or heard a lot. I didn't see any of it.
Awful though. God.
But yeah, that saying
yeah,
something.
Heathen
man.
Child, you're right on. Brian or Joey, what about the next one?
Brian Reyes commented, "Loved hearing Tex in the studio with you guys. I'm a listener in Houston." And he does us proud. Every time you guys have him on the episodes, horns high from me and the missus.
Hell yeah. Okay, thanks, right, Brian. Dude. I'm sure Tex would like to hear that. I'm sure he will hear that. So, fuck yeah, dude. And yeah, loved having him here. It was fantastic and had such a good time. I wish it could have been longer and more of a time to chill, but it was great to see him. Yeah. It was great to see him. All right, Liver Killer 666. I love that one. Comments, you guys are probably the funniest, maybe. It was a typo. True crime podcast out there. Please don't change a fucking thing. It's perfect the way it is. Thank you for the entertainment. I'm in Hartford, Connecticut. Joey, another Connecticut listener there, you know. Our old stomping grounds. And then, Chris, what about this last one here?
Homer Bangs Marge. Says, Jesus Christ, Homer Bangs. Anyway, says, I'm really loving the cults this month. Each one is more fucked up than the one before it. So,
yeah.
I mean, nothing's going to get more fucked up than the Ant Hill Kids.
Right. So we had to come up with something, but Synanon, I mean, it's fucked up in its own right. It's fucked up in its own right.
It is fucked up, but. And, no, thank you for your comment. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, all of the commenters. That was great. Pick up a copy of one of my books on my website, PeteAltieri.com, MurderMetalMayhem.com, another place we like to tell people to go, learn more about what we're doing, and check out that web store. Joey, your distro, I'll link to that in the episode description, but anything else?
I'm going to have some... I was going to say, I am in the process of having new Goremonger shirts made.
Cool.
I got art from my buddy Nev Gruesome Graphics up in Chicago again. He's fucking badass. So he had a really badass piece that he posted right before I went to CDF, and he gave me a good price on it, but I didn't want to spend all the money because I was going to the fest. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, man, if I give you half now, can I give you half when I'm back? And he was like, oh man, I got like five other people said the same thing, you know, but I'll let you know if it falls through. And I didn't know if he was drunk, too, by the time I was talking to him, and whatever. So, anyway, I never heard back from him, so I figured he sold it. Fucking fast forward to, like, 2 weeks now, and I'm flipping through his Instagram, and a picture of that fucking art pops up saying for sale, along with some other ones, you know.
Oh, wow.
I hit him up, and I was like, is this still for sale, bro? I was like, I'll send you the money right now. And he was like, yeah, man, I think it is, you know, and I sent him the money. He was like, cool, I'll send you the email. This morning I woke up to a text. He was like, bro, I'm a piece of shit. He goes, I already sold that and just fucking forgot to mark it off. And so
that's rough.
I ended up finding another piece that he did, you know, for a little bit less money, but it's still a cool piece.
Not what you wanted, but still.
Right. Dude, the piece he had, it would have been so awesome. But anyway, the one I'm getting, still sick. New Goremonger shirts coming soon. Probably for September. So if anybody listening from Murder Metal Mayhem would like one, just hit us up and let me know.
Awesome. Right on, hell yeah. Awesome.
And you can like us on Facebook under Horns High Studios. We also have a Facebook group. We do have Twitter, but I don't know. That sounds like that's imploding over there.
It's called X now.
My daughter's boyfriend said he would handle the Instagram if we wanted him to. So
I don't know how to do that.
So I don't even fuck with that. But I'm going to let him do it if he wants to do it. So why not?
Oh, let me say something else real quick too. When we were doing the research for this, and you know, obviously, you know, you're like, hey, the guy's from Toledo, fucking Chuck. And I was like, oh, no shit. So I said something to Stephanie. Stephanie, her mom, are in Put-in Bay right now, fucking relaxing in the hot tub, fucking hanging out. You know, she took her for a few days, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was telling her about it, and I was like, hey, you know, da-da-da-da. And she was like, oh, that's cool, you know. And she was like, my mom was about to check it out and, you know, find out some stuff about it, but she stopped and said she wanted to hear you guys do it first, so... Layla's Peggy Sue from the 419.
Yeah.
Like, let us know what you thought. Yeah, queen. Thanks for waiting for our stupidity to hear right. how we
yeah. put it. Oh, there's let a whole lot more. There's job. A whole lot more than yeah. what we talked about. Oh, yeah. Shit, oh yeah. More.
There's always a lot more. You know, we can only do so much, and it would be like 3- and 4-part episodes, right?
Yeah.
All right. You could support the show by going to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem. $3 a month is all it is. Or you can do it from our website and save 25%. We can't let him go, though, without hearing a karaoke song, a little blast from the past. So crank this shit up. And until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And keep your fists out of a mailbox with a rattlesnake in it.
Fly from the corner of my eye. And when I turned, shit was love at first sight. I said, please excuse me, I didn't get your name. Oh, it'd be a shame not to see you again. And just when I thought she was coming to my door, she whispered sweet and brought me to the floor. She said, I'm 17. I'll show you love like you've never seen. How? She's only 17. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me. Come to my place, we can talk it over. How? Oh, everything's going down in your head. Said, take it easy. I need some good time to work it out to make you mine. And just when I thought she was coming to my door, she whispered sweet and brought me to the floor. She said, I'm only 17. You ain't seen love, ain't seen nothing like me. She's only 17. 17. Yeah. Yeah, such a bad girl. Let's work me overtime. Feels good. Dancing close to the borderline. She's a magic mountain. She's a leather glove. Ow, oh, she's my soul. It must be fucking love. She's only 17. The girl she gives me love like I've never seen. She's only 17. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me. She's everything I need. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me. Yeah, yeah.